Florida State just passed the halfway mark of fall camp. As Michael, we are only 2 weeks away from kicking off the 2026 season in Doak Campbell Stadium. And I couldn't be more excited, but I feel like it's a good time to do a temperature check, a pulse check on how we feel now that we've heard some things from camp, right? We're going off coaching interviews, player interviews, some of the open viewing periods for the media. And what I really want to do today is go back, and because a lot of the stuff that we talked about in our position previews and all that stuff during the offseason was based on a lot of the spring talk, based on a lot of, you know, how players did at their former schools and things like that. We've now had a chance to actually kind of get a read on what they've done since they've been in Tallahassee as we're really, really close to the season. So I feel like it's a good time to do that temperature check and go, you know, the areas I felt confident coming into fall camp, do I still feel that way? Are there some new concerns that have popped up from what we've heard? Injury reports, health stuff, all that type of stuff. So that's what we're talking about today as we get into this episode. So what's up, No Nation? We're the guys from Plant the Spear. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. You know the deal. And Michael, this is we're so close, man. We are so close to kickoff. We're definitely getting excited, but I feel like it's a good time to kind of step back, have kind of a relaxed episode where we just kind of go through, man, and what's your gut saying about this team?
Yeah, as you always like to say, Jesse, we're a bug to a bug zapper. So, you know, we're just ready to have Florida State football back on television, back in the games, being back in Doak or wherever you may be this season. You know, ready to be pissed off, happy, upset, mad, calling for somebody's fire. I mean, we're just ready for it all,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the offseason and preseason camp is all about projection. Yep. But now we get to start unlocking a little bit based off of what we can glean from the little bit we get from practices and coaches and players interviews. We can start to move from projection to this might be factual to when we actually kick it off against New Mexico State.
Yeah, it's hard. I got to say, it's hard to actually get a read on things when it's a closed camp. Like, we didn't get to see scrimmages this year. We didn't get to have open, you know, even the open media viewing periods are mostly just hitting dummies and stuff like that.
We didn't even have a spring game.
Right, no spring game, no nothing. So it is hard to get a good read. And to your point, man, like what we talked about before with this, all the talk and projection is great, but you're only going to know once they lace it up against New Mexico State and then follow it up with a real test against SMU, which, man, it's crazy to your point, like a bug to a bug zapper, man. I was telling my wife the other day, I'm like, it's crazy to think we're going to be back in Doak because I'm not going to New Mexico State, but I will be at SMU in like less than 3 weeks, man. So I cannot wait. Fall is a fun time anyway. There's a lot of other games on that we like to watch and stuff like that. So hopefully Florida State is in the picture this year. That would be certainly nice. But yeah, man, we're going to talk about the big picture takeaways that we've been able to read from this fall camp so far. And then we're going to go through the position groups, offense, then defense. And just kind of, like I said, man, do you still feel as good as you did? Or do you maybe feel a little bit worse about some positions? And so before we jump into that, I do want to bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall. Now, if you guys are headed down to Tallahassee this season, you can get some new game day gear from our friends over there at 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee. If you're watching from home, you can order it online, have it shipped straight to your door at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and make sure that you save yourself some coin by using code SPEAR to save 10%. And I do want to say on the Alumni Hall bid here, they are currently running a giveaway where you can win 2 tickets to the SMU game, a mini helmet, and a $100 gift card to gear up before the game. So make sure you head over to their social media pages, give them a like, give them a follow, and enter that contest because you don't want to miss that. Michael, it is move week, as Mike Norvell calls it, as they search to really kind of get the depth chart figured out. You know, I think the first couple of weeks of fall camp up until Jacksonville was just getting the team physically prepared and ready. And now you're really trying to slot in those positions. Like, there's some known starters on this team for sure, but now you're trying to really slot those guys in to the starter and really fill out the depth chart because, you know, really you got about next week. And then I know you don't have to put a ton into preparing for New Mexico State, but you're going to want to start working in a couple things for SMU, you know, and you don't want to get embarrassed by New Mexico State. So really it's almost time to start that game prep week. So, man, you know, that's why we're doing this episode now, because we're going to do our kind of final season preview, the W's and L's, as they say, as we go through the schedule and look at things. We're going to do that next week, so be on the lookout for that. I didn't have time to get my notes finished because I love to, like, really dig into the opponents so I know what's coming up on the schedule. For one, my old phone is at the bottom of a lake right now. And two, turning the big 3-8 tomorrow, yes, on Saturday. So yesterday was making a prime rib and stuff and just kind of enjoying the day off that I had, because I do work for the birthday weekend there. But yeah, man. And then also, I do want to put it on you guys' radar that coming up around the 26th of August, before we kick off against New Mexico State, we are going to have the ACC Network host of multiple shows over there. Taylor Tannenbaum is going to be, hopefully, unless things fall through, she is going to be making an appearance here. Florida State alum, ACC Network host, man. I'm excited for that show as well. But, Michael, it's move week. Trying to fill out the depth chart. Got a lot of position battles that are still shaking out.
Yeah.
It's a big week for Florida State before they start game prep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is where the rubber meets the road for a lot of those players. Some of those position battles that have been happening, you know, starting with Jacksonville. And side note, just real quick, can I just have a quick conversation about Jacksonville? Mike Norvell says that, and I'm not trying to be crappy to the program and all like this stuff, but somebody has to talk about this. Mike Norvell says that they go to Jacksonville every year to create, you know, adversity, so that, you know, away from Doak and away from this. They've been going, and they've gone 2-10 and 5-7. They've lost the last 11 games. Now, we have a state-of-the-art facility at that campus. Why don't we stay on there, save the money we spend to go to Jacksonville, and pay some players?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I know Ash and Daniel said it kind of put them in some difficult situations and stuff like that. But again, man, like, he also said they've never done that with any other team. So, you know, maybe that's something we can revisit in the future. But I do encourage you guys, with all the shows that we have coming up, to go ahead and like and subscribe and lock in with us here at Plant the Spear. But Michael, let's go ahead and talk about some big picture thoughts, where we feel better, maybe where we have some more concerns. And I will start with, I want to be as positive as possible on this show, right? Because again, I don't want to hold anything against a team that's 0-0. Like, they're undefeated right now. We don't know how long that'll last, but there's no point in you know, pouring on a team that hasn't lost a game yet. And so, but I do think there's been a few things we've been able to read. And I think the first thing that's positive for me that instills some confidence is I love the player-led leadership and the confident mentality that we've seen from them, right? I love the extra work that they've been putting in. You know, we just saw the clip the other day that came out on Twitter. If you're on social media, maybe you saw that or not, but Mandrel Desir was chewing someone in a very strong worded way, right? Another defensive lineman. And so, like, man, that's, I retweeted it over on our X account, if you want to check that out, that, man, that's something that this team has been missing the last few years. It's just that player led, you know, getting on someone's butt if they're not holding the line and making sure that the standard is held up. That's something we've been saying for the past 2 years that this team has not had. So to me, that player-led leadership, the confident mentality, I mean, they are confident as ever. Ashton Daniels said he thinks this is the best defensive line in the ACC. And it's like, okay, buddy, back that up just
down
a smidge. Yeah, let's calm down a little bit. But, man, I like – because – When you're a power four level athlete at Florida State, what do you want them to say? Like, wow, we're just trying to make the Gator Bowl, you know, or the tax slayer. No, man, you want them to feel confident in themselves. So I like that, as long as they can back it up on the field. I like the reports again of like them getting to the facility at 4:30 in the morning, things like that. I like the new coach's energy that has been, it's been really refreshing, from Ernie to Nick Williams to Cam Martin. We've seen them coaching them hard, man. They are coaching them hard. Like, there was one Nick Williams yesterday where they were hitting the sled, a clip that came out. He's like, that was some soft stuff.
Yeah.
He didn't say stuff, but that's what he said. He's like, get back and get another rep. And, man, I think just that's the mentality that you really needed to have instilled in this program after the last 2 years. So that is something to me that I think has instilled some confidence. Now, there is a few things from a concern standpoint where 247 do report there was a little bit of sloppiness in practice.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That I don't like this far into camp. But you know, man, I like the player-led leadership. I like the confidence. I like the energy and the intensity brought by the new coaches. And I'll throw it back to you on this. My biggest question off the back of that is, how does this team respond when adversity when they get punched in the mouth, when that culture gets put to the test? Because it does feel like the culture is better.
Yeah.
But we don't know how good that culture is until it gets put to the test, right? You have those player-led leaders who are chewing other guys out. That means there's some other guys who aren't pulling the line, right? It's all fun and games when you're 0-0. What happens if you lose two or three games?
Right.
How does that culture hold up? So I'm confident in what we're hearing from a culture rebuild perspective. I'm also my biggest question for the season is how do they respond in to adversity when that culture gets put to the test?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's going to be the one of the bigger questions of the season is, you know, when they get punched in the mouth, do they have a plan to get back off the mat and not lose games? And then when they do lose a game, what's their plan of not letting one loss turn into three losses or four losses, right? Yeah. A long losing streak that we've come to enjoy under Mike Norvell, for sure. You know, I was really impressed with just the same thing that you said with the coaches and stuff, where they seem to, you know, try to instill a new, different type of attitude, you know, yeah. Whereas maybe that may have been lackadaisical. You know, obviously we don't know. We didn't get to see a lot from the team the last couple of years, but maybe they intentionally are saying, hey, you know, we've got to get back to this, like, take no prisoners, you know, yeah. Like we're not going to slack. Yeah. I saw that Nick Williams video as well too. I loved it. I love that. I mean, cause that's the type of coaching Florida State's used to. I mean, under Mickey didn't let anything happen. Right.
Yeah.
Bobby, you know, everybody assumes that Bobby was just an old shucks guy. Bobby was a gangster.
Like, yeah, he'll love you up after he hurt your feelings.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so, yeah, getting back to that, you know, Jimbo was the same way. Jimbo would not mince words with you. And so I do love that. I also agree with you on the just the concerns from practices, you know, just some of that, that, you know, they're on 14 practices in 16 days. So it's yeah. expected that they're sluggish, that they're kind of underwhelming a little bit, but that's what adversity is. What do you got
that's
in
a good
you
point.
When you don't feel up to it, when you're tired, when the offense is running 70, 80 plays down your throat? Do you have another stamina gear in you to keep going, to keep fighting? So I'm actually glad that they're putting them in this way, that they're having all these practices so that we could see that sluggishness, so the coaches can coach that out of them to say, hey, you want to make something, you want to be different, you want to remain undefeated, you know, all those things, you're going to have to push through adversity like this.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because what happens when you have, you know, back-to-back three games in a row that are tough? And what happens when you go up to Boston College and you go to Pitt on the Friday night to follow? You're going to be tired.
Right.
There's times you're going to be tired. So, yeah, that's a really good point. And I do give some of the fatigue of camp, you know, a little bit of leeway for that. But yeah, that's a great point. I also do wonder, one thing that I am wondering is, you know, how having the facility for the first full off season will help. Like, that is something that, you know, they talk a lot about the virtual reality rooms and the walkthrough rooms and stuff like that. I do wonder how that's going to help as well. It's just kind of a side note thing that they talk about how amazing those facilities are. Hopefully it does help. Again, maybe we should stop leaving the facility to practice. You know, the other thing from a big picture perspective, and I have basically three things from the big picture perspective here. My second one is, I do like the confidence that you've heard from it being year two under Tony White. It does sound like, from what we've heard from both player and coach interviews, that they do have a much better understanding of the system. They also have they feel like they have personnel who fit the scheme better, right? And then to your point that you mentioned with the mentality, the attitude, the one thing that I have heard them harp on from players to coaches to everybody on that defensive side of the ball that we kind of have been missing the past 2 years is just the emphasis on being a physically punishing team, if nothing else. Like, Chris Jones had a quote that I loved the other day. He said, "They teach you to solve your problems with violence." Now, you shouldn't do that in real life.
But
on the football field, I love it, man, because even Tony White said that. Like, if you're going to miss an assignment, you just make somebody pay physically. Just lay somebody out. And so we haven't seen a head-hunting defense in years, it feels like, since 2023. And really, I think a lot of that, too, is when you're in the first year of a scheme, you're kind of frozen as a player, like, oh, am I in the right spot? Am I doing the right thing?
Right.
When you're more comfortable in that scheme, you can react instead of read, and you can be like, man, I'm just going to go knock the mess out of somebody, right? And so I really love that aspect from the defensive side of the ball. And I got something on the offense, too. But, man, that's the thing, feeling more comfortable in this defense and just being a violent defense. Man, we've been missing that. You talked about Mickey. That's the kind of defense we are known for at Florida State.
Yes. Well, and the whole point of being able to – the whole point of the frustration from last year was that because they had to be simplified, they couldn't be freer. Because when you know the defense, when you know that 3-3-5 stack base – man, it allows you to be freer when you understand what it's trying to do, how it's trying to attack the offense, right? But because they had to simplify it so much, and because you had all the locker room problems and the issues, man, guys didn't play free last year. When you play free, just you know this playing football, when you play free, man, it's a different mentality. It's a different mindset. You're not worried about, well, am I supposed to drop back on this coverage? Am I supposed to take this gap? You just know it. It just comes natural instinctively to you. And I hope against hope that they're not just practicing free, but they end up playing free as well, too. That they end up taking that next step to be the kind of defense that Florida State has been accustomed to all these other years, where it was just like, you know, when that spear walked on the field, especially the defensive side of the ball, you were like, man, we in for a long day. Yes, you were. Well, let's get back to that.
Yeah, 100%, man. I totally agree on that. They don't say fear the spear for nothing, right? Mm-hmm. And you've lost some of the fear out of that spear. Let's be honest. And so I'm hoping they get back to that headhunting defense. Again, that's something Chris Jones has talked about a lot. They got a lot of headhunters on that side of the ball. So I'm excited about that.
Yep.
Now, on the offensive side of the ball, you know, I was thinking about this when we had our group panel show with Rock and Noel on his channel that we were talking about. You know, I do like that now that Mike Norvell is back as the play caller, I like him having Tim Harris as his offensive coordinator. You know, I don't – you go back to – obviously, he wasn't the play caller last year, right? He was in 2024. We remember how bad that was. And, of course, they had a good offense in 23, even when Atkins was still the coordinator there, de facto coordinator, obviously. But, man, I don't think it's a coincidence that when Alex Atkins was his OC in 2024, the offense – you had the worst rush offense in the ACC, right?
Right.
Well, he went to LSU as the run game coordinator, and they had the worst rush offense in the SEC. So I think, obviously, even if Mike Norvell is the primary play caller, that offensive coordinator role is still important in the game planning, in seeing things, in knowing how to open things up. And maybe there's a time where he suggests a play or on something that he sees. So that is one thing for me, is I do like the fact that he has Tim Harris Jr. as his offensive coordinator now that he's back calling plays, rather than a guy like Alex Atkins,
right,
who, again, you look at what he did at Florida State in 24, then went to LSU and kind of followed up with the same thing. I think you're set up for a much bigger thing. Now, my concern off of that is, when you look at what we just talked about from both sides, is do they have the talent across the board to take advantage of that, right? And that's where I get to the strengths and questions part that I talked about on that panel show as well. Like, you feel really, really good about the running backs, but it's going to be heavily dependent on that offensive line. You feel really, really good about the receivers. That's going to be really, really dependent off not only offensive line, but also Ashton Daniels. We feel really good about the talent in the secondary. That's going to be heavily dependent on whether you can create a pass rush and get pressure up front. So I like the more comfortable way they are in the defense, the physical nature and all that stuff. I like the offensive setup better with Mike Norvell and Tim Harris. The question is, can you take advantage of the strengths of this team by being good across the board? Or is it just going to be like, man, they're putting the weight on their back, but there's only so much they can carry?
Right. Yeah, I think, man, you know, I think it's going to be interesting, obviously, with Mike coming back to the play calling. I've said this before. I think Mike has not forgotten how to call the game. I don't think he's forgotten how to coach. Yeah. I think he had a terrible offensive line and an unwilling quarterback, unwilling to run, and wide receiver group that just could not, for the life of them, catch a ball.
Right.
That makes you look like a terrible game day coordinator, play caller.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's forgotten. So I'm excited. I'm excited about the concepts I think we're going to see again this year, a little bit more multiple than what we saw with Gus Malzahn. The concern I have with that same thing is Mike back in the mental health space to be able to see the game as well as he did? Because you have to also admit that while, yes, he had a lot of factors going against him in 24, mentally – or what it perceived, I'm not going to accuse him of that, but mentally what it looked like from the outside looking in is that snub and everything that happened that summer really had a massive effect on him, and it just did not look like he could recuperate it throughout the season. Of course, he had all the other extenuating circumstances, but that's a factor as well, too. So while I'm excited and encouraged by the fact that, you know, he's talking about the different elements of the offense, I'm also concerned about where his mental state is for that as well, too.
Yeah, we need Gray Hoodie Mike to come back. Like, if you get that back and you blend the systems of, like, the Malzahn run game with the Orville pass game, having Herb Hand and having Tim Harris and also having Mike back as the primary play caller, because we both agree that, you know, Gus is a tried and true system, but it's aged, it's dated, and it's predictable. So I think Mike Norvell's offense is more exciting to watch.
Right.
And if you can blend in those concepts. So, yeah, if we can get, like, those things with Gray Hoodie Mike mentality back, I think you're going to be – in a good position from this offense, you know, and again, man, I just think with some of the leadership and stuff that will help him feel more confidence. You know, Deuce had a quote the other day, speaking of quotes, that I really liked on the ACC network when they did the road trip thing. He said, you can never be too big to do the small things, or you'll be too small to do the big things. And so I love that attention to detail that this team has had, and hopefully Mike gets back to that same detail on game days. Now, the last and third point that I had from a big picture perspective that I am just watching from this team is the overall team health. And this is just something that kind of popped up on my radar lately. I mean, we know Trey Wisner has been limited in camp. Sounds like he basically has not been participating almost at all in live drills. We just heard the news that Carson Hobbs is out for the season with an ACL. Otto was limited in the last practice in a green jersey. Mekhi Bayer has been limited, didn't participate in either one of the scrimmages. You know, just things like that. You hear a lot of these guys that have been limited, and, like, there's really two tough games right out of the gate, man. You need everybody on board for those. Now, granted, you could probably get away with resting some guys for New Mexico State, but, again, you need those guys to be available to get in sync for that SMU and for the Alabama game, right? You get that little bit of – you get that bye between Alabama. That should help, too. But, man, like, I just – it feels like we're the most dadgum injury-prone team in the world every year in and out. But, like, it's just something I'm watching. I know they're being precautionary. I know a lot of the guys that are in green jerseys aren't, like, hurt. They're just monitoring their health, right, and letting them work through some things. But from just a wide-view standpoint, man, you need to be healthy with such a front-loaded schedule. And so it's just something I'm keeping my eye on as camp progresses.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we've read that obviously Trey Wisner's been out a little bit. Some of the offensive line have been out a little bit. And you're just like, my goodness, can we just please catch a break? Can we catch a break anywhere? No Who kidding. Do I need to pay? I don't believe in the sports gods, but, man, if I need to throw up some incense or something, like.
Yeah, let's go back to New Orleans and get a little voodoo.
Exactly. It's just if. Man, what's going to make or break this team is especially along the offensive line, because I know that Herb Hand and basically what we read, they're very confident in that top five, whoever that five is. They're very confident in that. I don't know if they're as confident in the next five or the next three or whatever you want to say. So it'd be great if we could keep if we could go into, you know, New Mexico State and SMU and Alabama, man, just as much on the uninjured side as we might be looking a little bit on the injured side. And the last thing I'll say before I throw it back to you is, you know, the Trey Wisner injury thing is almost like, again, we even said back in the offseason, like, why did we go after another running back? That's not what we needed. We didn't need more defensive linemen.
Who was injured at Texas.
Who was injured at Texas. And now it's looking like, gosh, he's injured here. You know, is he really going to be ready by the end of the season? You know, these coaches don't tell the truth about injuries, right? Is he really going to be ready? And if he's not ready, man, we literally wasted all that money for a player that we won't even have at the beginning of the season when we could have went out and got some serviceable defensive linemen. So that's my only other concern with that, with the injuries. It's just like, gosh, are we wasting money here by getting all these things and not even getting what we need? The ROI hasn't returned on him.
Yeah, I hope he's ready. I mean, again, because it's a long season. Right. So, you know, but we're going to talk about that in the running backs in just a second. But, guys, before we move on to the offensive and defensive position groups talk about this episode, where our strengths and concerns lie, if you want to get in on the conversation yourself, there's no better place to do that than the PTS community. Look, this is a new thing that we've launched. It's basically what you know as the legacy sites have as their message board. It's the same thing that they have, but with more features. It's packed with a bunch of stuff that's going to be fun for you guys. We have community leaderboards. You have customizable user profiles. We have live game day chats that are going to be popping off when the kickoff starts. We have all kinds of fun stuff over there going on at the PTS community. And look, man, again, we're only 2 weeks away from kickoff. The more people that we can get in the PTS community, the more fun it's going to be throughout the season. So Make sure you guys go check that out. You can find that at plantthespear.com. I have a thing at the top of the website where you can join at, or you can hit the boards link in the menu. I will also link it in the description here on YouTube and on the podcast, so you can check that out. You can get started absolutely for free with a no strings attached account just to get in on the conversation, or you can join the PTS Insider starting at just $8 a month and get some added benefits there as well, and help support independent FSU coverage like we do here at Plant the Spear. So we greatly appreciate those that have already jumped on that, and we look forward to everyone else who gets in before the season, because we're going to have some fun in there, man, and we want you guys to be a part of it for sure. So go check that out at plantthespear.com and get in on the conversation. So, Michael, let's talk about offense here, and then we'll go through by position group and just some of the things that we're hearing right now. When we start at quarterback, there have been lots of good reports from camp about Ashton Daniels, right? We've heard Mike Norvell mention, you know, his confidence in the system and the understanding of the offense and things like that. We've also heard him mention there are, as Mike Norvell likes to call it, opportunities to get better or opportunities to improve. So I think my question for Ashton Daniels is, first off, I do feel a little bit better about him just coming in and being a guy who can take care of the football. We saw that happen at Auburn. He talked about that in one of his interviews he did with EJ Manuel on ACC Network about just getting better about taking care of the football. But, you know, the thing is, man, like when you hear the opportunity to get better, that means there's still some of the things that live inside of Ashton Daniels showing up in camp, showing up right. in practice that maybe has Mike Norvell concerned. We heard a camp report the other day that Mike Norvell himself was over there coaching the quarterbacks pretty hard the other day.
Yeah.
And again, man, you're talking about a first-time quarterback coach in Austin Tucker, which does make you a little bit nervous.
Right.
But, I mean, he's a veteran guy, and the reports from players as well make me feel pretty good about Ashton Daniels, but it's still the throwing that does it. That concern still lives in the back of my mind.
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest and say, you know, trying to be – put this a positive spin on this. You know, I think Ashton Daniels is going to be a competent running program, running quarterback. I think he's going to be able to keep Florida State mostly out of, you know, third and long situation, like really long situations. I think he's cut down his turnovers, and I think that's been something that's been seen in practice as well too. So I'm really positive about that. Where I'm not positive is, we talked about this on a panel show that we were on the other night, is that, you know, in the 7 years that we've had Mike Norvell as our head coach at Florida State, you have to learn how to read him and all of his, you knows, in his press conference. And I'm just telling you that the few times he's talked about every time he's talked about Ashton Daniels, it always comes where he talks about his leadership, his acumen, all of that stuff. And then when it's actually about the on the field stuff, with the exception of this last practice where he actually had some positive things to say, he's always talking not necessarily about positive strides, but like, you know, you can feel him on the field. He's getting better there. He's getting there. You know, he's still got this to correct, you know, stuff like that. It just makes me worry that Mike does not have a lot of confidence in what Ashton's doing, but there's nothing better behind him. So yeah. That's my only concern when I listen to Mike Norvell talk about Ashton.
Yeah, and I will say that, you know, again, you're asking him to run a little bit different offense than right. he was recruited for when Gus Malzahn was still here. Now, speaking of what's behind him, that is one I do want to touch on, because it does sound like, from the reports of camp, Malachi Marshall might now be quarterback too. I think he is Ash yep. Kevin Sperry. You know, again, Kevin Sperry was brought in when Gus Malzahn was here, that kind of last-minute addition in last year's class, as a guy who was, you know, definitely a mobile quarterback. And when you just look at the way he's kind of struggled in fall camp, it sounds like Malachi Marshall has passed him for that quarterback two spot. And I think we may see that battle shake itself out over the next 2 weeks. And especially if both of them are able to get some reps against New Mexico State, I think that is something to watch, man. I still feel like, going back to where, if Malachi Marshall was here in the spring and he was 200 pounds, I think he'd be your starting quarterback right now.
Right.
So I do, like, if you could rewind, go in the way back machine, that would be the one thing I wish he would have been here for, that spring quarterback battle, because I don't know that you'd have a named starter right now. Because I don't, from what people have watched, we said this when we just watched the film, he by far has the most arm talent from a passing perspective. Now, obviously, Ashton Daniels brings a different dynamic in his running ability that Malachi Marshall does not have, But I do think he is going to be quarterback two. And I do think if the staff stays intact, I think he's the plan for 2027. So I hope we get to see him a little bit this year. But, man, that's a little bit of an interesting development. If something were to happen to Daniels or he struggles,
right,
I think Malachi Marshall is going to be the guy they're going to go to.
Yeah, listen. We've heard nothing but great things practice with him. You know, whether or not he has full command of the offense yet is, you know, is to the eye of the beholder, which we don't have a beholder there, so we can't tell you. But yeah, what we have heard is that that dude's got an arm. He's got a cannon. He can make all the throws. He's been, you know, obviously so much so that he's moved to second, potentially, based on what we've seen and read in the depth chart. You know, you're talking about passing a guy who's been on campus for almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
And this guy's only been on campus for a month or so, and he's already passed him. So that excites me. Hopefully, you know, Daniels works out and you don't have to go to Marshall this early. But if you did, you know, then I wouldn't be too unconfident. I'd be unconfident, but I wouldn't be too unconfident.
Yeah, I would be. I'm just intrigued to see what it looks like, right, man. To be honest, like, I know you're not gonna have the running ability and the durability that Daniels brings, but man, I'm intrigued to see that arm, right? Especially with the receiver group that you have. Now, moving on to running back, man, I'll start by saying this: I feel when we came into this fall camp, it was like, okay, I thought Wisner was going to probably be the guy, and we were going to see if Chroma was going to take that step to be ready to be 1A, 1B, and things like that. Although I will say you always wanted Chroma to be that guy because he's the homegrown guy.
Right.
Man, right now I feel I could not be more confident that Usman Chroma is going to take that step into being a real dude. Like, he has improved his body. He has improved his pass blocking from what we've heard. Chris Jones talked about that. And I think people sometimes overlook that he was an extremely dynamic receiver in high school. So he brings a different aspect to his game. Like, you can put him in the slot if you need to. You can throw to him out of the backfield. It's going to depend a lot on, can the offensive line pave the way for him to do that? But I feel more confident now than I did at the beginning of camp or during the offseason that he can be one of the top backs in not only the ACC, maybe even the country. He looks great physically. He looks like he's ready. You know, he's been basically getting all the RB1 carries. I feel really good about where Usman Chroma stands. And to play off of that, man, I also feel really confident that Sam Singleton is going to be a much bigger part of this offense than expected.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to be good. Like, when you watch him in drills, man, he's so fluid. He's so quick. Like, he almost looks like the best one in the drills where, you know, again, we don't get to see all the drills, just kind of moving through the bags.
Right.
He's so quick and he's so fluid. So, you know, we know Mike Norvell likes to use 21 personnel. Mm-hmm. So I think where I'm at is, like, you know, I do question where Wisner fits in the depth chart a little bit from a running back perspective, being limited as he has. Now, that said, look, he's a proven veteran back. You don't need him for New Mexico State. So I think as long as he has a week or two to get back in game shape, he's been taking mental reps, I'm sure. I think you're going to be able to see him jump in the mix and be fine, right? I think he'll at least help with fresh legs being late in games or late in the season. He gives you some injury protection. I will say that as well. But I'm kind of, as far as the pecking order goes, I'm lessening his impact a little bit. I still think he's a good guy, man. Again, he ran for 1,000 yards at Texas a couple years ago. I still think he's going to be a part of this offense, but I think I've rearranged my pecking order, right? I think it went from where I thought it might be like 1A, 1B with Wisner and Chroma to Singleton. Now I think I'm going for sure Chroma. Then I'm thinking it's Singleton, and then Wisner's kind of running back three. But, man, I feel more excited about the running back room now than I did before, just seeing the step that Chrome has taken and seeing the step that Singleton, he's put himself in place to get some real carries this year. And I still think Wisner is going to be fine. I just think you've kind of moved down the pecking order a little bit there.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always been confident. I've always felt like the running back room was probably one of the best positions on the team, right? As far as the team goes, you know, I haven't lost any confidence in Usman. I think he's going to be a beast this year. I think with another year here, he's going to be able to just take that next step, that next level. You know, Mike Norvell is going to want to run him and run him in a different way. Now, obviously, they've talked about having the same kind of, or have a mixture of Gus and Mike's offense. So you're probably going to see some of that inside split zone, some of that the trap. And of course you're going to see a counter as well too. And I just imagine Chroma running that. Oh, That'd be a thing of beauty. Sam Singleton, I think he's going to be probably your back two, you know, probably when they run that, like you said, 21 personnel, two running backs, one tight end, that pony set where you got a running back on each side of you. You can do a lot of different things with that. I wouldn't even be surprised if you saw some of that go-go offense this year from Brendan Marion, where you got the quarterback and two running backs on either side of you at the same time. Just to try to leverage that, man, he looks so smooth, like you talked about. He's also the special teams coach, Schrader, I think his name is, said that Singleton will be returning kicks. So we're going to see that again, yeah. See that this year as well, too. The thing about the only concern I have, again, I mentioned earlier, is Trey Wisner. Like, you know, what is his injury like? Is he going to be available for the start of the season? And if not, then when do we get to see him, you know? This is Florida State has become synonymous with paying somebody big bucks only for them to disappear after making a significant thing. You know, I think about Squirrel White, who probably could have benefited from coming back to college with this injunction that's going on to redeem his one catch career at Florida State. But yeah, that'd be my only concern is Wisner and where he's at. But overall, even without Wisner, this room was going to be close to elite anyways.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I just feel more confident in that now. And you know what? Maybe with the way the spring or the fall has shaken out with Wisner on the depth chart, maybe that helps that running back rotation kind of continue to get filtered down. Now, I don't want to act like Wisner's just not on the team anymore or he's a walk-on. Again, you have a proven back who played very well in the SEC coming in, so I do think he's going to be a big part of this offense. But, yeah, I do think now Kroma, they're going to rely on him to be the guy, and they invested heavily in him, and I feel really good about him being – RB1 there, and I feel better about Singleton than I did. So I'm liking that, liking the way he's looked, because he's waited his turn, so it's time to see him get some carries. Now, wide receiver, continuing down the offense here, I feel better about this group's depth, right? Deuce is Deuce. Nothing really changed about Deuce. I think he was going to be good to begin with. I did find it interesting that on the ACC road trip, he said that he knew Ashton Daniels and threw with Ashton Daniels before he got to FSU. So that could be some added chemistry that could help with Deuce. Obviously, the most exciting thing with Deuce is the fact that they're going to move him around the field a little bit more. So it's not just going to be line up on the outside, run deep, and do a jump ball. You're going to see him all over the place in the slot, everything. He even said that he tried to get him to line him up a tight end, but Mike Norvell wouldn't do it because, you know, he came out as a tight end out of high school. But Deuce is Deuce, man. I'm excited about that. Danzy seems to have improved his well-roundedness of his game, becoming more of a developed receiver. We know last year was his first year truly playing with the receiver position. He came in as a running back, and it seems like he has taken that little bit of a step. Deuce Robinson is the number one cheerleader for Mekhi Danzy. He's like, man, I think he's going to be one of the best guys in the country. But it's the depth that I feel better about. Like, those two, I feel like, have taken a step forward. But it's the emergence of Jason Lopez that really has me excited about this group. And not only that, we have seen now Javon Boggs get back in camp, get back in practice, get back in the mix. He had a nice catch the other day in fall camp. And, you know, Devin Carter was doing good, but he has been limited with some injuries. So I think the kind of the pecking order is shaking itself out a little bit there, you know, where it might be Boggs and Lopez 1-2 with Devin Carter getting some limited reps there. But I feel pretty good about where those three, that wide receiver three position that we talked about in the receiver preview was like, how are they going to handle that? Who is going to step up at that position? Right. I feel better about that wide receiver three position than I did before. And then on that, man, we've also heard Tayshaun Gelsey. His name has been mentioned quite a few times throughout camp. He's 6'4", 227, and now in year two, Tariq Mallory is another name that's been mentioned. He's 6'5", 215, also in year two. We've heard some good things about both of those guys. So, man, I like the size that you have at wide receiver. If those two guys, you got a 6'4 and a 6'5 receiver behind Deuce, who's 6'6". And then the depth, you know, if you can have two to three guys you like around that size with Deuce there, and then you have three guys that you feel good about at wide receiver three, along with Danzy coming along. Man, I like what you can do with that from mixing up your personnel, mixing up your formations. I also like Mike Norvell's depth of route concepts to be able to take more advantage of this receiver room. You know, if Ashton Daniels can feed him and the offensive line can hold up, you know, I already felt good about Deuce, but I feel better about the depth of this room and the size that they have after, you know, since we've started fall camp.
Yeah. I think, you know, Deuce is going to be Deuce, and I've heard the same things, or at least read the same things about you with Mekhi Danzy, that he has been really been turning it on as well too. Boggs has been in a green non-contact jersey, but he looks to be moving freely as well. Devin Carter, I believe, has been in a green contact jersey.
He's been limited too, yeah.
I think he's been limited as well too. But yeah, I've heard a lot about Mekhi Dansby, impressed, and Jason Lopez. Now, here's the thing. I guess I'm just jaded. I'm sorry. I have to admit that. But, you know, last year they talked up and down about Boggs, up and down. Now, granted, he had injury issues, so I get it. So I just want us to maybe just put like a break, you know, tap the break a little bit, just a little bit like that with Jason Lopez and all the hype that's coming out of campus. Because, you know, first year, you know, he's still figuring out. He might see some playing time. You might see him early in that SMU game. We'll see. Let's see him then. I like what we're hearing about him, but let's see him then before we, you know, begin to anoint him. Not you, Jess. I'm just saying, like, what I'm hearing and reading, anointing him the next great wide receiver. Like, let's just calm down real quick.
Oh, I'm all aboard the hype train, right? Now, I get it. You do want to pump the brakes on a true freshman, right? Yeah. Especially a guy that missed part of spring while he was playing basketball. But he was a very high four-star. Like, mm-hmm. I saw someone in our comments one time was like, well, you know, what are you going to get out of a 2 and 3 star? It's like, nobody. This was like a top 200 recruit in the country. And he's, man, you just see the catches that he's making and the clips in camp. And I know we're only seeing limited sources of that, but we've heard so much about him. And, you know, I don't want to make a comparison or put anything on his shoulders, because I do think he's going to be splitting reps with Boggs, who is now out of a green jersey, which is nice. But, man, I mean, you think of Ryan Williams, a guy at Alabama who had a remarkable freshman season. Did you know, Michael, he was 17 years older in that season?
Did you know that?
They never mentioned it on the broadcast, and they should have. I don't know if Jason Lopez is 17 or not, and we might have to hear that 500 times. But I do think he can add something to that room that maybe it didn't have last year at that wide receiver position. When you talk about how Boggs didn't really perform like we thought he would based on the hype that we heard as a freshman. Right. So, like, I will say that, man, if you can just have that guy, I think that can make a big difference. Now, continuing down to the pass catchers here at tight end, I'll be honest, I haven't been as encouraged by this group. We have seen Desirio Riles mentioned by name by Ashlyn Barker as a guy that does present some problems in the pass game. You know, and Mike Norvell did mention being able to go 12 and 13 personnel, which we did talk about wanting to see when we did our receivers preview. Man, you just haven't heard a whole lot from Landon Thomas. I haven't heard a whole lot from Chase Lofton. We've also heard that the blocking has been an issue for the tight end group. So, you know, that's something, if you're talking about going 12 and 13 personnel, that maybe is an issue from a blocking standpoint. Mm-hmm. But I will say, and I'm gonna mess this one up, Grayson Labiad. He is a guy who is 6'3", 250 pounds, and a fifth-year player that Mike Norvell mentioned has done the dirty work for them throughout camp. So I think that could be a guy that could be more of a blocking tight end for you that you may – I mean, you don't want to tip your hand that this guy can only block, so you know he's going to be a blocker when he comes in the game. But at least he gives you an option as a guy who can block, and they've talked about using him. Xavier Tiller is another guy we've heard about as a young guy who's transformed his body and looks bigger than what he is on the roster. So maybe you have some more depth of options there. I think you'll probably be okay from a receiving perspective from the tight ends, but I do worry about what they can do from a blocking perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard much on the tight ends except for, you know, just a little bit of struggle there. I think we'll have to see kind of what they show themselves to in the first couple of games there. Mike Norvell likes to use them a lot more than Gus will, so we'll see them involved in that. But I think I'm still neutral because, you know, I don't think I've heard anything that made me super concerned, but I've heard anything that the things I have heard hadn't made me be like, oh, this is going to be a great year. So I think I'm still neutral. I'm still just kind of a wait and see mode with the tight ends.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. I just think if there was one position group, maybe I moved the peg down one notch, not like, oh my gosh, they're terrible, but I think it would probably be tight end. Cause I just haven't heard a whole lot of good from there. I have heard some things about Desirio Riles in the past game, like I said, so that is one thing to watch there. Now talking about the offensive line, again, one of the most critical position groups on the team. You know, I think they have 8 guys they like. And with Otto being banged up a little bit and being held out of practice, I think that, you know, and just in a green jersey the last day or so, I think it's given them a chance to work some different combos. Now, I will say from what we've heard in camp, like I haven't gotten the feeling that the ceiling is any higher than I thought it was coming into camp, right? I still think that, like, they like the starting five that we thought was going to be the starting five the entire time. I've heard that there is some concern with Nwaiu's adjustment to that power four level at your at tackle, which does concern you a little bit, because obviously you can slide Nate Papps out, but you don't really want to do that because he played much better at guard than tackle. So you do have some flexibility there. I still trust her hand, man. I really do. It's just I worry about the ceiling of this group when you're talking about going against the better defensive lines on the schedule, like Alabama, Miami, Clemson, Louisville. You know, there's a lot of good ones on the schedule. So, like, you know, for me, for them, it's more like I do worry. I hope their floor is high enough. That's what I'm hoping for. Like, I'm not projecting a super high ceiling. I think it's a common feeling amongst everyone who looks at this team closely that they're not going to have the ceiling that they did last year. But you hope the floor is high enough. And and the biggest concern for me is with having some guys banged up, you know, they had spring, they had summer, and they haven't been like really injured and missing a lot of time. But can they come together fast enough with that front-loaded schedule? Because you're going to need them to really play at their peak against SMU and Alabama. You got no time to feel this thing out. You got one game to kind of get your footing, and then you got to be all in on that offensive line. So, you know, again, man, not bad on the offensive line for sure. I just haven't heard anything that's like, oh man, these guys were way better than we thought they were.
Yeah. Well, I will say that I think if I had to ring up a notch, it would be with the offensive line. Now, again, because they've been a little bit injured, you know, there's been some of that, but nothing too serious, at least from what we heard. But the reason why I would raise my notch up is because Fields still came out with his, you know, rankings of the 2026 offensive line. He has Florida State at number 23. So he believes that this is a top 25 offense. I mean, just to give you an example of it, he thinks Bama's the 61st offensive line. He thinks Florida is the 42nd. He thinks Clemson is 40th. He thinks Miami has the 39th ranked offensive line. So for that, like, in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, Phil Steele, who probably has eyes and ears on campus and is getting tad bits that probably we're not getting, if he feels like Florida State has a top 25 offensive line, well, that gives me a lot of encouragement. And I know he's probably talking about what he may believe is the starting five there, but that gave me a lot of encouragement, or that gave me another level of encouragement to say, you know, maybe Herb Hand is cooking something we don't even know yet. We can't even smell it yet.
I hope so, man. I hope you're right. Now, I will say Phil Steele, he does a great job with his magazine. A lot of that is he talks to the coach for like an hour or so. And, you know, Mike Norvell has elite confidence and he had elite confidence in that 24 offensive line. So I don't know that I would project him to be better than Miami's offensive line, which is some of the talent that they have there. But yeah, I'd say I'm neutral on this. I just haven't heard anything that makes me feel like, okay, I'm 0% concerned about this offensive line for sure. Now, we're going to switch over to the defense, and this one will be a little bit quicker, but for me, let's start with the defensive line, because I think this was everybody's main concern coming into the season. Like, the depth is still my main concern, right? Not that you can't throw bodies out there. Like, I know people will comment, well, you got this guy and that guy and this guy and that guy. There's a difference between putting a pulse out there and having a guy who's going to really impact the game, right? And so I still do worry about the drop-off in effectiveness as you get further down the depth chart, right? I am a little bit concerned that we haven't heard more from Kevin Wynn in camp, being how critical he is to the success of this defensive line. Mike Norvell did mention him the other day, but it was basically now he has the stamina to play more than 2 and 3 snaps in a row, right? Like, that's good. You're going to need him to do that, but we haven't heard a whole lot that, like, the Kevin Wynn is just wrecking dudes in camp. Like, we just haven't heard that. And so that I do worry a little bit about. Really haven't heard much on the Jordan Sanders front either. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure that's who Mandrell Desir was yelling at in practice the other day. And again, you're going to need him. It's the interior guys that you're going to need. But I will say, on a positive front, I am very excited about the twins. It does sound like they have taken a step. It does sound like Mandrell Desir is going to have a ridiculously good year if he lives up to the hype that we've heard throughout camp. And they're going to be heavily relied upon, right? So the depth is still something that I worry about from that perspective, from the defensive line. But, you know, just because it's quiet doesn't mean a whole lot. I mean, we did hear Tony White mention in the scrimmage that they had like 10 TFLs and stuff like that. You've heard, you know, obviously, we liked Deontay McRae and some guys like that. But it's just, I still worry about the depth. I still worry about Kevin Wynn being able to play the role that we know he needs to play for this defensive line. I'm not talking about to be serviceable or to be good, to hit its peak, to hit its ceiling and have two waves of guys, maybe a third wave of guys, where it's not like when you have to take the first wave off the field, it's you're in trouble, right? You want guys who can lack that drop off of talent. Now, I will say, obviously, I think you can manufacture some depth, and this plays into the linebackers as well, which we'll go into. But I do feel like you can manufacture some depth, right? If you can stick to a three-man front, and I know a lot of people hate that three-man front, but if you can stick to a three-man front, then obviously that gives you – you don't have to have four guys, right? You need six, not eight. So that narrows that depth that you got to have a little bit so you can manufacture some depth, which I think one of the things you can do through that also helps with the linebackers because as – we'll talk about linebackers next, but I feel confident you got about two, maybe three right now that look pretty good. I'm worried about the depth of that room as well. Not that – I like the top-tier guys. It's the depth that I'm worried about outside of those guys. But I think what one thing they're looking at this year is really relying more on that jack position, that hybrid defensive end linebacker that they did not feel like they had a guy who could really play that position effectively last year. I think they really do think that Rylan Kennedy and Jalen Anderson can be a really solid 1-2 punch at the jack position. So if you have those guys who are able, you have a two deep there that can fill that position, then to me what that does is one – that's like a hybrid linebacker. So you really only need two linebackers outside of that, right? Because he's going to be kind of that third guy. You can pull him down into the box. Or you can also have, you know, where you're running a three-man front with a jack, right? So you can kind of manufacture depth on the defensive line and hide some lack of quality depth at the linebacker by having a good jack, right? Now, the concern with the jack is you're going to be relying heavily on a JUCO transfer and a guy who has never really played a big role in a defense coming from Texas A&M and Rylan Kennedy, but they like what they've seen so far. And so, you know, the depth is still my main concern, but I do feel pretty good about the pieces on the defensive line, like the twins, that it does sound like they've been wrecking dudes. And so that I do like.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, the concern has gone up for the defensive line.
Yeah.
Namely, number one and only concern is Kevin Wynn. Because as we've seen, this defense works best when it has a space eater. Somebody who can take up space, who can take the focus off the ends that you have to double team, you have to chip, you have to help out on, right? And if Kevin Wynn does not live up to that, well, now you've just neutralized your two ends. You've neutralized Rylan Kennedy. You've neutralized the other side of that line. And then it doesn't matter what you do with that jack position because now you got the offensive line fully focused on all the guys coming up front unless you're blitzing. So my concern has actually gone up with the lack of not hype, but just lack of just commenting around Kevin Wynn. Like it seems like the coaches either just don't notice him because he's not standing out or he's not doing great enough that they want to, you know, embarrass the kid. So you have to be concerned about that because you don't have Daryl Jackson back there anymore to eat that space for you to be a good run stopper. You don't have that. It's Kevin Wynn's job, or at least what we're assuming, to make that. Now, they got some bodies behind him or bodies in front of him. Doesn't matter. They got some bodies that they could throw at the problem. But, man, he's supposed to be the one that you're already paying a lot of money for, and he's supposed to be the star, you know, redshirt freshman, whatever he is, to step up and do that. So that'd be my biggest concern. I think when you look at linebacker there, you got Chris Jones and Caleb Valley, who are basically looking like they could potentially be part of the starting linebacker core there. I like that. I like, obviously, what Chris Jones does. Caleb Valley was hurt last year, so finally getting to see him on the field and earning the opportunities, I think it's going to be a cool moment for them. You know, what they do with that jack position, I think, like you said, it's going to be very interesting to see how they use it and how they leverage it there, especially if they're using Rylan Kennedy there. But again, it all comes back to that middle of that defensive line. If you cannot clog that sucker up, you might as well go ahead and take your lunch pail and go right on home.
Yeah, that's the thing. And again, like, he might be fine, right? You might see him get on the game, game film, and just wreck dudes. But, like, if he was doing that consistently in camp, you would have heard about it. And really, I will even say over the last couple of weeks, Daniel Lyons has kind of gone quiet. You haven't heard a whole lot on the front there. So it's not, again, I want to emphasize, it's not that they can't be good, and it's not that they're not doing good. You're just, to your point, man, you're so heavily reliant on the interior of that defensive line being good.
Right.
That you need those guys to live up to their very highest ceiling of all ceilings, right? Now, again, you're going to be able to create depth with a guy like Jordan Sanders and Deontay McCray. And, you know, you also got Diamante Diggs and all that. You're going to be able to create some depth.
Right.
It's just how good is that depth? That's the question. That is the question. Yeah. Again, man, when you're talking about rolling people out there, like the Twins were the exception, not the rule, when you talk about freshmen hitting and stuff. So you can throw bodies out there all you want.
Right.
Those bodies can get flung around too. So you need guys who are game wreckers, at least 2 to 3 deep, especially if you have to go to an even front, right? But my thoughts on the linebackers, I echo what you said, man. Chris Jones has been a breath of fresh air. Probably the highest of highs of things I've heard out of camp that I really love. Like, we thought he could be that guy, right? We were worried a little bit coming from the G5 level. How can he compete? But, man, everything you've heard throughout fall camp just reinforces what this guy is all about. Right. A physical headhunter, chiseled body linebacker that is going to be the heart of your defense. And so I can't be more excited about him. To your point, hearing about the emergence of Caleb LaValle lately, I mean, Chris Jones called him Luke Kuechly, right? Yeah. Like, I would love to have that.
What we've been praying for, right?
Exactly. Like, if you could have that kind of guy who's just an all-over-the-place athletic linebacker, he says all the time, like, man, Caleb is making the calls for me because he knows where you're supposed to be, super smart guy. So that, to me, makes me feel better because he was a big question mark, right? You took him from UNC, didn't even get to see him play at all last year, didn't know what that was going to look like. The other side, when you talk about not hearing from any guys, I haven't heard a cricket about Omar Graham or Blake Nicholson. Nothing coming from. We have heard 10 times as much talk about the freshman Isaiah Williams as we had any of the other guys in that room. Mekhi Bayer is another guy who's been basically limited in a green jersey all throughout camp. So how does he fit in once he gets back in action? That was supposed to be around this week. So, I mean, he's a guy that has a good understanding of the system already.
Right.
But, like, I think now, it sounds like Chris Jones and Caleb LaValle are going to be the two that you're relying on, with Isaiah Williams, who unfortunately went down in that second scrimmage. And so he's getting back on the field. So, like, I don't know that he's going to be a huge part of the linebacker room, but he's going to be a part of the linebacker room. Right. So I think it might be like three new faces across the board that are going to be your top tier linebackers. And then, you know, I think OG and Blake might not be getting a starting position, right? And especially when you factor Bayer in. You know, we had concerns about the linebacker. I feel better about the linebacker position by far than I did last year. But the fact that we haven't heard, I mean, really nothing about those guys makes me feel like it's going to be new starters across the board.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't put it past them. I mean, you know, Omar and Blake have had their chance. They've had their chance over and over again. And so if there is, and Isaiah is able to come back from that injury and be just as good, then I walk into the season really confident about our linebacking core, for sure.
Yeah, and then moving back to the secondary here, not a whole lot with the secondary because, you know, I feel good about there.
Mm-hmm.
I think obviously the depth of safety with Carson Hobbs' injury took a hit. Now, honestly, in fairness, I wasn't really high on him as a player to begin with, but he did provide some depth there. It does sound like, from what I've heard and from what Mike Norvell even said in the press conference the other day, that if something were to happen at safety, like Mekhi Jones or something like that has to come off the field, they may turn more to like a nickel type of situation where they are able to move a corner like Nehemiah Chandler or Kadarius Jones or something like that. Where you're able to move those guys. Ricky Knight, the third, is another young guy who's gotten mentioned by name as a guy who can fill that slot that Mike Norvell talked about the other day. So still feeling really good about Ashton Barker. We've heard nothing but good there. I still think you're kind of battling out the position on who's going to start at the other safety spots with KJ Kirkland. I think Mekhi Jones is kind of a penciled in starter there. CJ Richard is the one that's kind of projecting more. There's a battle with KJ Kirkland. So I still feel really good about the safeties. And there's really not a whole lot to say at cornerback. Like, it's Jabril Rawls. You still feel good about Jabril Rawls. I haven't really heard from the other cornerback perspective who's stepped into that role. It is moving week, so they're going to be looking in to who's going to be CB2, so to say. But I feel good about both of those guys. I feel good about the cornerback room. The only thing, my thoughts on the DB, is that I feel as good as I did to begin with. I think that's a position group that has a lot of talent. It's just taking a little bit of hit in depth. Yeah. But, man, we've actually heard good things about Charles Lester, right?
Yeah,
we've heard some good things about the young guys coming into that room. So I'm feeling pretty good about this DB group right now.
Yeah, I think, I would agree with you in the same way. I think on the other side, that QB2 or CB2 I think Jones, the Kendarius Jones, I think he's kind of got a leg up right now from what I've read too as well. So I'm not projecting him starter. I'm just saying he has a leg up, you know, and that could be as big or as little as you want to imagine. But I think he's kind of the one that's a front runner at this point in time. But yeah, rest of that, obviously Ashton Barker, all those guys back there, like very confident. My confidence hasn't changed in that. Obviously we'll get to see when they scrap it up.
Yeah, and then I do want to mention special teams, right? Because we haven't spent a lot of time on special teams, but we've actually got to hear some things. We've heard from Coach Adam Shire on what he's been able to do. And I feel better, right? I do feel better about where the special teams was because I was a little bit worried about it, right? I mean, you also – one, you have a kicker who didn't kick a field goal last year. And then you know, as a reserve at Oklahoma State. And then Mike Norvell actually, like I think in one of his very first press conferences, challenged the special teams because he said he saw some things he didn't like. So it does sound like Jason Lopez is going to be your punt returner, which does make me a little bit nervous that it's a true freshman, but we know he has hands. We know he's a dynamic guy. We know they've worked multiple guys back there. I'm actually okay with getting him back there at punt returner because if he has that kind of elite athleticism and good hands, then find ways to get him the ball, right? At kick returner, it sounds like it's going to be Danzy and Sam Singleton, which gives you elite speed back there. That I'm excited about because, you know, that's just been something that hasn't really been a difference maker for you in the last couple of years. So if you can actually have something good on kick return and punt return, that sure would be nice to see. Like, I miss the days of Greg Reed, the Peter Warks, right? Like, I miss those days of special teams being a help and not a hindrance. But just get someone who can catch the ball before we do anything else. And also from a kicking standpoint, man, we have heard that the punter, Daniel Hughes, can flip the field for you and is a legit weapon. So I like that. And then also that Gabe Panikowski has been solid and hitting from depth. So it does, you know, kickers, something we've struggled with a little bit. So, you know, I'm feeling more confident in the special teams. We didn't know what it was going to look like when you bring in a new coordinator and you bring in a new kicker and a new punter and you're replacing the return guys. But so far, man, the early returns are that I think special teams at least isn't going to be a hindrance this year.
Right. Yeah, I don't think so either. I like the new punter guy. I like watching his YouTube videos. I think he's kind of funny. Very interesting, very eclectic, but, you know, in a good way. Yeah, I think he's going to be great. I heard that Gabe is going to be your place kicker there. And then I heard something else, and I can't think of what I heard, who's going to be your kickoff specialist. But anyways, yeah, I think it's going to be good. I'm excited to see this new kicker, see if he can live up to being a Florida State kicker and hopefully go the good way and not the other way that we've had Florida State kickers. So
yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Panikowski rhymes with Janikowski. So
That's right.
And speaking of, congratulations to Janikowski on getting his number retired at the New Mexico State game. So that's pretty cool as well. So that's going to be it for the overall position previews, man. I think just to bring it home, like, you know, I feel like a lot of the strengths that I thought were strengths coming into this season, I actually feel better about those strengths, like the running backs, the receivers, and the DBs. I actually feel better about those strengths than I did in the beginning, right? Yeah. Some of the questions I think are still there. The offensive line, Ashton Daniels' passing ability, the depth of the defensive line, right? And then some of the linebacker stuff. I feel better about the linebackers. Man, you wish you'd hear more about some of the returning guys from a depth perspective. But overall, I would say that, man, again, we have to remind you that we totally understand none of this matters until we see it on the field. Right. Like, if they go out and lose by 30 to SMU, none of this matters. But I feel like the culture, the effort, the attitude, the intensity in practice has ramped up from where it was the past 2 years ago. And I feel like the guys that you were really heavily counting on at certain positions, like a Chroma, a Deuce, a Danzy, I feel like those guys, Chris Jones, have really taken that step forward right now. There's still some questions on this roster, but man, I'd say overall right now I do feel a little bit better about this team than I did coming into fall camp at the halfway point.
I feel the same about this team. Again, I told myself and I said it to you guys that I'm going to be this until the ball kicks off, and even against New Mexico State, unless it goes terribly wrong, I mean, we could blow them out 80 to nothing, and I'm still going to be this, because what I need to see is them against SMU before I will let myself believe again. So I feel the same. There are some positions, like I said, that I feel a little bit more confident in. There's some that I'm still concerned about. But overall, I'm right here. I'm not letting myself get anywhere else because I have to see it on the field. I need them to show up. I need them to face adversity, get through it, and turn it into W's.
Yeah, man, 100% agree. So that's going to do it for today's show. We wanted to bring you that pulse check, that temperature check midway through camp as Florida State gets ready to really kind of put a cap on moving week, as Mike Norvell calls it, and get ready for game prep week as we are only 2 weeks away from kickoff. By the time you watch this, we might even be less than 2 weeks. So make sure you like and subscribe to the channel and check back with us. Again, we're going to be doing our final preseason breakdown, our final preseason show, Michael. Who would have thought it's already that time? We're going to be rolling that out next week. And then, of course, we do, of course, we're going to have a New Mexico State preview. Even if the game's not huge, we're still going to talk about what we expect to see from Florida State in that game, what you can expect of New Mexico State in that game. We're going to have the interview with Taylor Tannenbaum that's going to be really fun rolling out as well. And we're also, we've been kicking around the idea. I forgot to mention this in the beginning of the show. It looks like we are going to be a go on a live Friday show, a live Friday football show. You know, I'm already thinking of what we can do with that. We're going to talk more a little bit national stuff. Of course, we're going to keep it Florida State centric. You know, man, it's going to be a fun way for us to have live shows worked into what we do here at Plant the Spear. So, again, it's a great time to like and subscribe. It's a great time to rate and review on the podcast. It's a great time to head over to Plant the Spear and join the PTS community. Right. So with that being said, guys, we appreciate you watching, and we will catch you on the next one. The big one, the final preseason show. So with that being said, we'll catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.